Are you looking for freedom? Freedom from the daily grind and hustle? Or just finding a way to live the life you always wanted? Then join us on the Investing for Freedom podcast. Our host, Mike Ayala, will help you discover new ways to find freedom with tips, insights, and interviews. You'll learn the exact systems he's used to travel the world and live his best life. True success and happiness are all about freedom. And here's your roadmap on how to find freedom on your own terms. Welcome to the Investing for Freedom podcast. Here's your host, Mike Ayala.
Thank you for joining me on the Investing for Freedom podcast. We have a very unique show today. And I've actually been, we've been talking about this show for probably a year, maybe a year and a half. And I had to cancel on my guest. I can't even remember why. But I'm really excited to do this today because there's some backstory to this. And I happen to know Emmanuel Guarino's father pretty well through a community that I was involved in and just thought the world of him, which we'll get into this. And Gene Guarino was actually the first guest on the Investing for Freedom podcast that I had on a second time. And we went down a rabbit hole during COVID. And we were going to talk about investing and the update on assisted living. And he started talking about COVID and what was going on. And, you know, he started planting some ideas about just, you know, potential water stuff. And I was like, wow, what is going on here? But that's what I always loved about Gene was just, you know, he was as honest and as loving and just one of the best people that every time I was around him, I just felt like a better human. And so today we have Emmanuel on the podcast, and we're going to talk about investing and just relationships and how this all intertwines. And then there's a little twist to the story that we're going to get into that I think the community is going to get a ton of value out of. And I don't even know what to expect, to be honest. So Emmanuel, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Mike. I'm so glad to be here and just excited to jump into all the topics we're going to cover. It's going to be great.
Yeah, you know, and normally I take a spin with Investing for Freedom because I don't think that any of us are doing anything, whether it's a W-2 job or owning a business or investing, that doesn't in some way come back to our values and what we really want out of life and the family unit and the relationships. And I know we can have an amazing conversation around that. But yeah, I'm just excited to kind of see where this goes. So why don't you, first off, why don't you just talk about your father for a second, because my perspective, but I'd love to just reminisce for a second.
Yeah, my father was obviously an incredible man. And the big things that I learned from him just growing up was just working hard and relaxing hard, right? He wasn't playing hard, like going to the casino or, you know, drinking too many drinks, anything like that. But he just, when it was time to work, it was time to work, and it was time to play, it was time to play. And my father cared very, very deeply about people. He was an amazing listener, and he was just a very, very genuine person. And I saw people from all walks of life just be drawn to him, you know, and it was just amazing to see from this perspective. You know, my father, you know, he was, you know, 5'6", balding, and, you know, a little big around the belly. And it's like, yet he was the most popular person in any room he went into. Is just like, I got to talk to that guy. And people just would swarm him. And what was so funny is, He very rarely was the one talking in these conversations. He was just listening. He was just being present with that person and just kind of nudging them in the right direction, whichever thing that they needed at that time. And so he was incredibly loving. He was a one of one type person. And, you know, it was strange when he passed away, because it was almost in a weird sense. It was kind of like he wasn't a human, you know, it was almost like he was like an angel or something, you know. It was like he wasn't like everyone else. And it was just amazing getting to have all the time that I had with him. You know, we worked together for many, many years, and just the trips we got to go on, or, you know, the work trips we got to go on, and just spending time, you know, watching a game together. Just an absolutely incredible human being. And sad that he's not here, but I know that we will see him again one day.
Yeah. I want to say this now and then maybe take us a little different direction, but we're going to get into here in a little bit in the episode what Emmanuel is doing today, which is something that I think every listener, you said this off camera, but everybody's impacted by it in some way, whether personally or And I'm really excited to unpack this, but we're going to get into that in a few minutes. But as I was just listening to you, I would love to have a conversation about growing up in a family that invests in real estate and business. And here's why. My audience, I think, is primarily in some way, shape, or form, you know, they're family people, they're trying to build a family, they're trying to build a better life. And we have so many conversations. And Kara and I run a couples mastermind too. And I see this so often, just like, I think as adults, and you have at least one kid, maybe you guys have had more since we talked, but I think as adults, and even, you know, that balance that you were just talking about, we're always just trying to minimize the amount that we mess up our kids. So I would love for you to just share for a few minutes, good and bad, growing up in a business family, a real estate family, maybe just give some wisdom to the audience about, you know, that are raising kids and also investing and building businesses.
You know, we were talking about how my dad growing up, he was on the road maybe 4, sometimes 5 days out of the week. It seemed like he was gone, you know, 6 days out of the week from my perspective. But when he was home, that time was very intentional that he spent with us. It was going out back and throwing the ball around. It was, if we're watching a movie, we're talking and we're invested in it together. And he would take us on trips, you know, with him when he was traveling. And I still remember going to Chicago with him and seeing him speak in front of a big audience. And that was just such a cool, impressionable time in my life, you know, just getting to be with him and just getting to see what he did. And I remember another trip, just getting to go to the All-Star game in Seattle. And we went to the Home Run Derby. And just whenever he spent time with us, he was just incredibly intentional. It was just, you were the only other person in that room when you were with him. And it was just incredible to get to have that experience with him. We didn't have quality or quantity time always, but we always had quality time with him. And, you know, if I had to say things that he didn't do good, I would have to, you know, sit here for a while and scratch my head and think, you know, what could he have done better? What could he have done? You know, he was just an absolutely incredible man, loving, caring, and he was just a great example of what a Christian man should be. You know, just someone who stands up for what's right. I think about some of the things that he always used to say. One that always stuck with me, well, I don't think it was his line or anything, but he would always say it. It's just, it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. And that definitely came into play in my life later on down the road. But he would just say these little lines, and I'm sure some more will come to me as time goes on, but it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. And that was probably the most impactful one that I had when I went through challenges in my own life, just going, okay, what are you going to do? You know, now is your time. It's never the wrong time. It's time to stand up and it's time to fight this evil. Other than that, when it comes to real estate, investing, family, and all these different things, you know, one of the things I think was the most impactful story that sticks out in my mind is, you know, my father, he lived in upstate New York, middle of nowhere, upstate New York, essentially. And they moved out to Arizona to start a church. Now, I know that sounds like what a witness protection family would do or something like that, moving from New York to Arizona. But they came out there with 7 different families to start a church. And his side of things was he was the one who was making money and really supporting the other 7 families as much as he could as time was going on. And that was just a really, really cool thing. And one of the other cool things was, yes, my dad had times in his life where he made a ton of money. And then there was a stage of his life where he made like no money. I'm sure we'll get into that in just a second. And then he made money again. But his generosity was just off the charts. And a story that I just absolutely loved was, he didn't tell me this story, but somebody else told me the story about him, where there was a family in the church, they were just really struggling. And he just took a bunch of money, a ton of money, and just shoved it into their mailbox, just chock full. And he knocked on their door and he ran away with him and one other person. And that person came out and they left a note or something that said, go to the mailbox or something, you know, the Lord will provide. And they go to that mailbox and they see it. And it's like, it just helped them with whatever situation they were going through. And, you know, that's who my father was. It wasn't about me, let me take the credit. It was about, you know, the Lord has blessed me and let me start blessing others. And it was just a beautiful thing. So we can stop there for a second before I go into the recession and how things kind of changed. If you want me to dive into that, I can as well. But yeah, that was some things about him growing up.
You know, I think, you know, as I'm hearing you say this, and I have young adult children, and I'm just listening. You're like, your dad would just, you know, be so proud. And you're obviously very proud of your dad too, but I kind of want to shift. And I appreciate you just, again, I wanted to just pay honor to him because it's amazing. But I think your dad and really my audience probably wants to hear about you. So I'd love to kind of transition, and that doesn't mean we can't continue to weave in your dad. But I think if there's one thing that I kind of wanted to drive home there, and when I think about my kids, and I know you know this as a dad, like I want them to be better than I was. And I hope that my kids can, you know, reminisce when I'm gone and say things like you just said about your father. But I would love to kind of transition to, and you can take this either direction you want. I don't normally do that. I try to, but I would love to let you weave just kind of, you know, the process, maybe growing up in the business, transition to investing, what the business is and was, and how you got to today. Yeah. In any way that you want to do that.
Sure. Well, actually, it kind of works perfectly, moving right into the recession, and then we'll kind of get up to where we are today. So, like I said, my father was an amazing man. He did a lot of speaking on the road for a couple different seminar companies, and he was very, very successful. But we were not immune to when the recession happened. And when the recession happened, we were doing really well financially. Just bought his dream home and remodeled it and gotten the, you know, the Lexus. It was like the American dream. And then the recession hits, and I just started hearing murmurs, you know, with my mom and dad, like, hey, you know, we're going to start pulling back a little bit and things aren't going great. The seminar company, now I know, went under, and, you know, he was just left living on savings at that point. And this house that they had built up that they thought was going to have all this value, well, it was worth, you know, a third of what they paid for it when they originally bought it. Wow. And during this time, I was, I think about 13, 14, I was a 6 foot 13-year-old who could dunk a basketball. And I said, you know, I might really have a chance to make it to college or maybe even the NBA at some point. But here's where things kind of changed for me. Was one day I was playing down at the park with a friend, and they told me about soda and Mentos. And they said, have you ever put soda and Mentos together? I'm like, no. They're like, well, if you do, it explodes and it's awesome. And I'm like, well, we got to do that. So I called my mom and I said, Mom, can I have a couple dollars for soda and Mentos? And she just kind of stops me mid-sentence. And she goes, Manny, we don't have money for frivolous things like soda and Mentos. Your dad lost his job. No way. And that was pretty much the only real financial information I got at that moment. So from my 13-year-old, 14-year-old perspective, I'm going, we're living in this beautiful house, but at any moment, we could be out on the street begging for food, or I might need to quit high school and go get a job at 7-Eleven. Like, I got to do something here. And so I said, what can I do to help the family? Because I literally asked my mom, should I quit school? Should I go get a job? She's like, no, stay in school, keep going. But I said, you know what? The one thing that I got going, the God-given talent, is I might be able to play basketball. So I kept working at that, working at that. I was shooting 1,000 shots a day, trying to make it to the NBA, trying to make it to the big time. And while all this was going on, well, to finish that loop right there, I kept playing. I did not grow another inch. I did not get any quicker or be able to jump any higher when I was 14. And so I graduate high school. And then I'm just left with this real void in my life. And that kind of transitions us to where we're going with this story. Now I had, you know, all this free time because I wasn't playing basketball. I didn't get any college offers. I definitely wasn't making it to the NBA. And around that time is when I got handed the iPhone. And I got handed the iPhone, and my dad walked in the room and he said, hey, you know, we've got some laptops and we got, you know, an iPhone for, you know, somebody. They threw in this free iPod video. Do you want this? And I'm like, yes. And then the next week he comes by, he's like, you know what? We bought your sister a laptop. I think you need one too, because you're going to be, you know, needed for, do you want this laptop? And so in like a 2 week stretch, I went from having no access to any pornography, anything that I could look up online, to all of a sudden I got a supercomputer in my hand that I can look it up at any moment of any time. And so my dad, as he's leaving the room, I remember he's about to close the door and he's like, oh, Manny, can I trust you with this? Are you good with this? Are you fine? You know, and I'm like, yes, I'm good. No. And so he closes the door. The door's three-fourths the way shut, and I'm already looking at porn at that point. And so this turned into a daily thing. It started getting out of control. You know, just my mind would just be having all these lustful thoughts. At one point, you know, it was getting so bad, I would be watching porn when I'm driving home from school because I couldn't even wait to get home from school. It was getting really, really bad. And so flash forward, graduate high school, I'm in college, I'm depressed, I'm not going to college, I'm living in my parents' basement. And my parents are like, you got to get a job, you got to go to at least community college or something. Otherwise, we got to kick you out of here, man. So I go into community college, I get a job at Jamba Juice, and just depressed, smoking weed, drinking, you know, all this stuff. And at my lowest point, I remember I was flunking out of community college, and I was driving home, and I pull into this parking lot, and I remember just putting my head on the steering wheel and just starting to cry and just going, you know, I'm a failure. You know, there's nothing that I can do right. Everyone else is so successful, and I'm just this screw up. And I look up, and I see this big building in front of me, and I'm considering jumping. And I remember the Lord putting in my heart, just saying, just go home and give it one more day. Just do that. And so I drive home and I see my dad, and my dad sees me and he sees that I'm struggling, and we go out and we talk. And, you know, quickly after, I tell him what's going on, and he just let me know that he loved me and he cared for me. And then he gave me one of the best piece of advice that he's ever given. He just said, Manny, nobody cares about you as much as you think. And you might think that that's a terrible piece of advice to give to someone who's suicidal, but for me, that's exactly what I needed to hear, because I had come from a place where I was surrounded with friends whose parents were successful. All the kids were going to the top colleges. They're doing great in school, becoming doctors and lawyers. And I'm over here flunking out of community college, you know, making smoothies at Jamba Juice. And he just said, Manny, nobody cares. They're focused on themselves. Don't worry about it. And so that conversation started to put into motion me having a comeback. And essentially, to fast forward a little bit, my father, during this period, was trying a bunch of different businesses, and none of them were really working out. They're all kind of, you know, promising, but then they would fail. And it was just one thing after another. And it was just like, man, you know, this is a real struggle for him. And he went, after the recession, I want to say, I may be wrong, but it maybe 5-6 years where it was like, there's no money coming in. There's a lot of money going out, and he's trying to keep things afloat. And the one thing I remember seeing in my father during that time is I know he was under incredible amounts of stress to turn things around. He had the weight of the world on his shoulders, but he never let us see him sweat. And that was one of the things that he would always tell me, you know, it's like, never let him see you sweat. And it wasn't that he didn't reach out for help and have community around him that he could open up to, but with his children, he was that strong pillar for us in that time, because that was a very scary time for us growing up. Now, on my end, I got back into school, eventually got my degree. I met the woman of my dreams, and I remember during this period of time, just not really knowing what I wanted to do in life. You know, I went back to school, got this degree. So I reached out to the richest man I knew, and it was a friend's dad that I knew, and he's a multimillionaire. And I said, what should I do? And he said, you know, I think you should look into what your dad's doing. You know, he's got this new business. It's called residential assisted living, and it's really cool. You should check this thing out. And it's essentially you're putting a nursing home in a residential home in a neighborhood. And I said, okay, I'll check it out. My dad had just recently started teaching other people on how to do it. He had set a few up. Now he's teaching on how to do it. And I went in there and I said, oh my goodness, this is incredible. And I'm like, Dad, what can I do to help? You know, I anything you want. And I was expecting him to give me a job or some handout or something. And he's like, well, I don't really have anything for you. You know, like I can't like hire you, or like, I don't have anything. But a lot of our students are looking for homes to do this in. So maybe if you find some off-market deals, or if you find some good homes for this, maybe that would be helpful for our students. And I said, I'm on it. And so what I started doing during that period was I just started cold calling hundreds and hundreds and hundreds a day, care homes or nursing homes, you know, residential assisted living homes, every day, just saying, hey, do you want to sell? Are you interested? If you're not, let me know. Let's talk. Let's go out to lunch. Let's just taking massive, massive action. And soon, what happened was I started to just rise the rank in the assisted living field of being the top realtor because nobody else was talking to them the way that I could. It would be a realtor from Keller Williams. Hey, do you want to sell your house? Well, I have an assisted living inside of it. So it's very weird. There's a business and there's a house. And so everyone was confused. Like, how much is this worth? Am I even allowed to sell this at my current brokerage? And, you know, they can feel the insecurities on the realtor's end. So they didn't want to list it with them. But I let them know, I know the business. I can help you out. I can connect you with buyers. And, you know, pretty quickly, Beck and I became the top residential assisted living realtors in the state of Arizona. And that was a really, really cool moment. Now, to kind of take the curve on the side of the road or the left that we were talking about earlier, during all this time that Beck and I are becoming the top realtors in Arizona for assisted living, we're making all this money. We traveled to Europe like 3 times. On the outside, everything was looking really good. But Beck and I, we were really, really struggling because from since I was 15 years old, I had been struggling with watching porn. And this problem, I had always just said, you know what, one day it'll just go away. It'll just magically go away. And it didn't magically go away. And then I said, well, when I get a serious girlfriend, it'll go away. And then I said, well, when I get married, it'll go away. And it just never went away. And so I said, well, when I get married, I'm going to be done with this. And then it was 3 months before the wedding. And I said, all right, 2 months before the wedding, I'll be done. 1 month before the wedding, 1 week, one day. And it's the night before our wedding. And I still remember the scene that I watched the night before our wedding day. And when Beck and I got married, we went to the honeymoon suite. And I wasn't even able to have sex with her because I was having what's called porn-induced erectile dysfunction. And she was crying and it was tough. And in that moment, I knew I needed to tell her. It wasn't because of her. It wasn't anything that she did. It was because of what I had been doing, watching so much porn. And so I told her, I said, Becca, I have a serious problem and I'm really sorry. But in that moment, I didn't say I wanted to stop. I just said I was sorry. And so Beck and I, for the next 3 years, the first 3 years of our marriage, we just slid this problem under the rug. And we just said, you know what, let's just pretend like it doesn't exist. But I'm sure you could guess how this goes. You know, the problem started affecting all types of areas of our lives. I was having anger and paranoia. She's going to catch my phone. Our sex life was just terrible. It was a chore. It was just awful. But on the outside, everything was looking so good. And I was really, really struggling with a number of things going on internally. First, I had a huge, huge scarcity mindset that was contributing to this porn addiction. When I was 14 and we're struggling, I'm going, I never want to feel any financial struggle ever in my life. So I said, I need to make money. And then I said, I need to make more money and then more money. But there never could be enough money because the more money I made, the more scared I became that I was going to lose it all and that I wasn't going to have anything. So it was this never-ending game that I was in. In addition, I didn't really mention this, but when I was growing up, I had ADD, short-term memory. I had a huge imposter syndrome that I wasn't like everyone else. So I had to take pills to be normal like all the other kids, and I wasn't like everyone. So I was dealing with all this. On the outside, things looked good, but on the inside, it was terrible. There was one moment where I was asked to do a TEDx talk in Amsterdam, essentially, a little suburb outside of it. And I do this talk on how successful I am, and I'm this millionaire at 28, and look at me. I get off stage, I go drink 10 beers, I go smoke 3 blunts, and I go watch 2 hours of porn. And I'm just broken and empty inside. And so that brings us to about 2020, right when COVID started. Beck and I are sitting there one night, and she essentially says in so many words, do you want to go have sex? And this is how screwed up my mind was. I was actually upset with her because I wanted to go watch porn instead.
Wow.
But I begrudgingly said, fine. Okay. So we go to the bedroom, try to get things going. It's not working. Try to work harder. It's not working. Eventually I just say, you know what, Becca, you're the problem. You're the issue. It's not me. It's you. And I'm screaming at her and I'm yelling and she's crying and I storm out of the room. I slam the door and I just go sit down in our living room. And I remember just sitting down there and putting my hands on my head and just saying, you need help. You cannot keep going down this path. And I remember just praying to God and just saying, God, give me direction. And the Lord put on my heart clearly. He said, go to Becca and ask for that help. And that was the absolute last thing in the world that I wanted to do but it's what I knew I needed to do in that moment. And so I swallowed my pride. I went in the room and I just said, Becca, I'm sorry. I have a huge problem. I'm addicted to porn. I cannot beat this on my own. I love you more than this problem, but I can't beat this by myself. I need your help going through this. Will you be there for me? And in that moment, I'm expecting her to scream at me, to tell me it's over and we're done. But what she said next was, okay. And Beck and I, after that moment, although it was hard, we started to see a difference. See, addiction, it dies in the light and it can only thrive in the darkness. And when I brought that thing into the light, it started to lose its power over me. And we started to have more vulnerable conversations and we started to talk through this thing as a team. But early on, we had a lot of questions. You know, she had questions like, how am I supposed to support him? What am I supposed to ask him about, not ask him about? And she would read articles online like, you know, if he's watching porn, that means he's cheating on you, which means you're going to get a divorce. So start getting your affairs in order. And on my end, I'm like, how am I supposed to overcome this? Is it just willpower? Am I supposed to just pray 25 times a day? I mean, am I just some deviant? Like, why do I have this problem and other people don't? And so we had a lot of questions. But like I said, the number one thing we noticed in that time was just bringing it into the light. It started to lose its power. Now, I got a whole lot better during that time. I didn't completely overcome it, but I got a whole lot better. But in the next season of our lives, we were working at the family business, the seminar business, teaching on how to do assisted living homes. And my father had built this company up now to a $10, $12 million a year company, one of the best seminar companies in the entire country. Incredible stuff. And literally out of nowhere, he gets sick, he's in the hospital, and he's dead. Out of nowhere. And we're all just like, what just happened? Mm. Now, he passes away. And right after that, I get handed his role. I'm now the head of the company. I'm now in charge. And actually, 6 days after he passed away, we had a 3-day training coming up and I had to get ready for that 3-day training. It was 12, 14 hours worth of talking. I had 6 days to get ready. And that was a very challenging time. Yeah. That way. In that moment, I was handed more money, more prestige, more fame, everything the world could tell you would make you happy. But in that moment, the Lord was telling me, walk away and follow me. Hmm. And what I would say back to God, I would say, okay, you just tell me what you want me to do. And then I'll kind of weigh that. I'll weigh that option. I'll let you know if that's a good decision or not. And then I'll get back to you. That was my relationship with Jesus. I'm like, thank you for giving me all this money and this fame. And like, I love you. Like, you're great. But like, we're kind of like equals. Like, I'm the God of the universe, really. And the Lord wouldn't tell me, but this feeling that the Lord had put on my heart just would not go away. And eventually, Beck and I just made that decision of saying, okay, you know, we can be Jonah, right, in the Bible, and he can send a giant fish to eat us up and spit us out on Nineveh, or we can just walk to Nineveh. We don't know what this Nineveh is, but we're just going to go willingly. So we quit. And about 2 weeks after that, Beck and I are sitting down at dinner, and we both look at each other, and we both at the same moment go, I know exactly what God wants us to do. Wow. God wants us to help people overcome porn use. And in that moment, that was incredibly exciting. That was a really amazing time, but it was incredibly scary because I'm like, God, first off, I'm like, God, I thought you were going to say you wanted me doing like insurance sales or something or like a different type of real estate. You know, I'm like, porn, I'm going to be the porn guy. And I'm freaking out because I'm like, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm still kind of struggling with this thing. I know I've gotten a lot better, but I'm still kind of struggling. And so I'm freaking out about this. But what was really amazing about it was about 2 days after that, I was working out at our home gym. And I just remember this like it was yesterday. It was like a lightning bolt hit me from the sky. And I fell to my knees. And I just felt the Lord say, raise up an army to fight this evil power. And in that moment, I realized that it wasn't us. We weren't going to be the reason that anyone overcame this or was able to defeat this evil. It was going to be because we were following the Lord and all we had to do was listen and take action. The Lord was the one who was leading us. And so Beck and I, when we realized that, we said, okay, this is what we're doing. We're going to be the people who help people overcome porn addictions. So we started reading everything there was on addiction and sexual addiction, porn addiction. And we took about 6 months just going through that process. And that's when I truly gained freedom from this after I put these practices into place. I was able to have, this is what's crazy. Paranoia and anger totally went away. Peace. Not being able to accept love from others. You know, I never could accept a compliment ever. No matter how much praise I got, didn't matter because I didn't love myself. And I was finally able to learn how to love myself and to accept that love from other people was amazing. One of the crazy things that happened, I lost 40 pounds during this process. And it wasn't like I was even trying to do that, but I literally went from like Brendan Fraser in The Whale to like, you know, P90X Tony Horton. And like, there's literally proof on our website to show you that if you want to check out that photo. But most importantly, Becca and I's love life grew to levels that I never could have imagined. Our love, connection, and intimacy was just off the charts. And it was just absolutely incredible. So to wrap things up real quickly, one last quick story. Beck and I create a course and we put it out there. And at first we were charging like $2,000 or $3,000. We just come from a seminar company. We're like, we got this. This is going to be no problem. This stuff is easy. So we charged $2,000 or $3,000. And we had a lot of people reaching out to us wanting help. But everyone was kind of saying the same thing. I can't afford it. I can't. We're just like, are they lying to us? Is it just an objection? What's really going on? But then we talked to a man named David. And David was 22. He was about to get married. He got addicted when he was 11. He was watching porn 6 to 10 times a day for 11 years. This is how bad he had things. And he was getting married. And he said, Emmanuel, I want to overcome this. I want to be done with this. And I'm like, David, it's easy. Just get the course, get signed up, get moving forward. And he's like, dude, I literally couldn't do this if I tried. You could check my bank accounts right now. I literally can't do this. And in that moment, I just felt the Lord say, tell him not to worry about it. And I said, David, I don't care about your money. I care about you overcoming this. Just do whatever you can. And he goes, I got $40. And I'm like, then you got the course. And David became the first person to get the training. Now, here's what's crazy. I start talking to David as I'm getting him signed up. I'm like, David, tell me a little bit about yourself. He's like, well, I'm in the Army Reserve and I'm actually in the Army barracks right now. And I'm like, hold on. God told me to raise up an army to fight this evil power. And the first guy who gets signed up is David, God's mighty warrior who took down Goliath. You're in the army. You're in the Army barracks. I'm like, if that's not a God moment, I don't know what is. But what's incredible about him is he went on, he took the course, he got married, they're expecting their first child. He's got a different job. He's making more money. He's in the best shape of his life. Like his life completely transformed. And when we saw how successful he was becoming, we just said, we can never let money get in the way of someone having freedom from this. So we became a nonprofit, just said, you know what? We'll let God take care of the money. Let's just focus on helping people. We made the course free for a long time. Then we made it like $10 a month. I think it's at, you know, $49 right now or whatever it is, very low amount. But when we did that, what was crazy is our goal for the first year was to help 10 or 20 people. We had 450 people from 28 different countries get the course and start finding freedom from this. And it's just been an absolutely incredible journey getting to be on, being on this mission with Becca and following the Lord. So I know it's a very long story, but that's the story of Team Vulnerable.
No, it was good. And I definitely didn't want to pause at any stage because I think the whole thing is important, but I do want to ask, because I feel like just like hearing that and listening to it, and you discussed a lot of this in your story, but can you talk to us about how destructive, because I think, I don't know that we even understand as, I mean, hearing your story and hearing what you went through and how challenging it was, my brain's sitting here thinking like, how many people think that it's not even a big deal or that it's not an issue? And so other than the things that happen with you, like how destructive is this? I'm sure you got stats and challenges and problems.
When we think about how destructive porn is, I'm going to just share a couple stats and then I'll jump into some more. 91.5% of men and 60.2% of women report viewing porn in the past month between the ages of 18 and 73. 88% of porn scenes contain physical aggression. You want to talk about how it warps our minds? When I heard that stat, I was like, what do you mean physical aggression? I don't understand. That's hitting, spitting, choking, slapping. And I'm going, oh, that's normal. Because that's how I learned. I'm a child who's seeing this and I'm going, this is normal porn, right? This is normal sex. They just want to be slapped around and this is normal. No, that's not normal. 49% of all porn scenes contain verbal aggression. Now, here's what's crazy about this. 1 in 10 users is 10 or under. The average age of being exposed to porn is 8 years old. This stat right here, intentional exposure to violent porn material over time predicted a nearly 6-fold increase in the odds of self-reported sexually aggressive behaviors in teens. So why is this such a dangerous thing? Well, people are learning that porn or sex is violence, right? Women just want to be beaten. They want to be, you know, spit on. 96% of physical aggression in scenes portrayed towards women expresses them using pleasure against it. So they're saying, I love it. This is great. Let's keep going. So we're teaching these young men to hurt women, to hate women, to see them as objects. People, when they're watching porn, they have no idea how far their minds have been warped. And let me give a very PG-13 or semi-R rated example. I talk to people now and they say, you know what, Manny, my problem, I just watch legal teen porn. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it, you know? And I say, okay, so if you watched a gangbang scene of an 18-year-old, you'd be totally fine with that. You'd be like, yeah, you get off to that. Yeah, of course. Okay, but what if it was one day before that and she was 17 and 364 days years old and she consented to it? She was totally fine with it. Are you telling me if you watched that same scene one day before that, you'd be throwing up? You'd be saying, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And you can start to see the wheels spinning in their mind of going, oh my goodness. I'm sure many people here have seen Sound of Freedom. People go, how could someone ever be, you know, having sex with a child? This is crazy. Well, when people start watching porn, it's a 25-year-old. Then it's a 25-year-old in pigtails. Then it's an 18-year-old. Then it's a 17-year-old. But come on, that's close enough. It's illegal in, you know, England or something, you know, that's fine. And then it's maybe a 15-year-old. I don't know. It's 11, 10. And then all of a sudden, they're on their way to Thailand to have sex with a child. And they had no intention of going down that place, going down that road in the first place. And that's because when people watch porn, it starts off with an image, then it's two images, then it's a video, then it's a couple videos, then it's a little bit more extreme. That's because our brains become desensitized to what we're seeing and we need more stimulus. And so what also happens during this time is when you're in a hyper-aroused state and then you see something scary, well, these neurons that are firing together are now wiring together. So you might be seeing a woman getting beaten up and all of a sudden you're like, I don't know why that gives me a boner, but I'm really turned on by this, you know, or you're seeing other very, very extreme things. There's a crazy stat, 20.7% of straight men have viewed gay porn in the past 6 months. And the amount of men that I've heard, like that stat is one of those stats where you're like, no way, that's crazy. The amount of men who come to me, hey, I'm watching stuff and they describe things. I'm like, I've never even heard of that. And they're like, am I gay? What's going on? And I'm like, no, your brain has been hijacked and it's just gone down rabbit holes that it never could have imagined. And the relief, literally, when I say these things, people are like, oh, I just thought I was the only one who was watching this. I thought I was. It's like, you are not alone. Like, people are watching a lot of weird stuff that they're thinking is normal. It is warping minds more than people could ever imagine. And that's why we're standing up and we're fighting against this.
Can you tell me, and I'm just making an assumption here, but can you tell me a little bit more about like the porn industry? I mean, it can't be good. Like, it's, how does this even start?
You know, it's pain, creating more pain, creating more pain, creating more pain. When someone gets into the industry, many times they've been abused. I mean, the percentage of someone who's in the porn industry versus not, the percentage of time they've been physically abused, mentally abused, sexually abused, is these crazy, crazy amounts. And when someone gets into the industry, they might start off with something like OnlyFans. I just went on this podcast, the Whatever podcast, and we're sitting across the table from this girl. And, you know, essentially she's a 22-year-old porn star. And she says, you know, I just got into OnlyFans because it's safer. And I just did that. And then, well, I got approached to do just a girl on girl scene. And I never do anything that I'm uncomfortable with. And then it's a guy and a girl scene. And then it's, you know, a couple guys. And then also, and then she's describing acts that I will not mention here because they would be very, very, very X-rated. But she's acting like this is normal. And it's just the pain that she's in that she won't even admit to. These women, the amount of drugs that they're taking, ecstasy, they're drinking, they're on all types of things to just make it through the day. And one of the people who was in the industry that, he had a testimony that's just absolutely incredible. Joshua Broom, he's one of the top male porn stars in the industry. And when he talks about his experience of just literally, I'm just making the money so I can go do the drugs, so I can get back up and do it the next day, the next day, the next day. These women, many times, they're doing porn, but really that's just an advertisement. So then they can be doing an escort business on the side. They can be having sex with random men in Las Vegas and California and whoever knows where. And that's what it's about. And the other part of it is, and this is a very heavy one, but 50% of sex trafficking victims have reported porn was made of them while they were in bondage. And so people might be watching this and they're going, oh, I'm upset with her because she didn't do it exactly how I wanted her to do it. And she might have a gun to her head. You might be watching a crime and you don't even know it. And that's what's so sickening about it is they want out. They're not loving it. This is a fantasy that you are watching. This is a job to them just to be able to get by. And it's just absolutely sickening seeing this. And it's just so, so tough. Actually, recently, in just like the past few months, there's been 3 porn stars who have died. There's been one who overdosed. The average age a porn star lives to is 37. 37. And a lot of times we think, well, they must be really rich. You know, they're living this glamorous life. They must be all Kim Kardashian out there who made one sex tape and now they're, you know, a billionaire. The average salary for a porn actor is $45,000. The average length of employment is about 2.5 years. And that's because when you get started, you're doing girl on girl. Then it's guy on girl. Then it's you're getting more extreme, more extreme, more extreme. And soon people are like, okay, you're done. There's nothing more we have to see with you. And you get tossed out. So then they go to prostitution. Then they go to stripping. They go to all types of different things. And just trying to get out of that life is almost impossible for them. So they're trapped in this hell that they didn't even want to be in the first place. But this is what they've been told since they were a child. This is the only way that you bring value in this world. And so these women are hurting. And the best book I could recommend on this is Shelley Lubin's Breaking the Porn Fantasy, or I got that name wrong, The Truth Behind the Porn Fantasy. It's right behind there. I actually read those books behind me just in case you're wondering. They're not just for show. But The Truth Behind the Porn Fantasy, she shares what it's actually like to be in the industry. And when I read that book, the level of post-traumatic stress I had of just reading that, because I realized all those scenes that I was watching was not just a woman happily enjoying this and she's having a great time. It's, oh my goodness, the amount of pain, the amount of struggle, her life, it's not good. And so when people's eyes are open to this, that's when they realize, oh my goodness, I've been sold a lie for a very, very long time.
Crazy. What are maybe some, and again, I appreciate you sharing, you know, your and Becca's story. I think the audience could probably extrapolate some of the process from that. But, you know, as we kind of wind this down, like, what are some of the practical advice and tips that you give people to, number one, confront it, deal with it, communicate through it? Cause it's, I mean, I've never sat and talked with anybody for an hour about porn. It's just not normal.
Right.
And I love that you can just come and just be open. And you and Becca obviously had to work through a lot, but this probably, it's so taboo. It needs to be a more normal conversation.
Absolutely. That was one of the first things when we had that conversation, we both just felt in our heart, we don't want anyone else to have to experience what we had to experience of just not knowing where to go. How do we navigate this thing? And I wanted help the whole time I was watching porn for 15 years, but I always felt I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't, right? I can't tell anyone because they won't love me and I don't want to stay in this life because it's terrible. It's bringing me down the wrong direction. I'm just literally in this hell cycle. And our course, when we originally designed it, was for married couples or people in serious relationships. We've now done courses for people who are single and kids and parents even. We have a course for them. But one of the biggest things about our course is we educate that teammate that they have in this process that's helping them through it, that they're not a deviant. They're not a pervert. There's nothing wrong with them. It's they've gone to this because it's a pain reliever. There's a pain that's going on inside that they're trying to medicate. And so when we educate that other party, whether that's the spouse, whether that's the friend, whether that's the parent, then they understand, oh, this makes a lot of sense. And you got a free drug in your hand that you can access at any time. Well, it makes sense why 90% of the world is watching it every single week. So when people understand that, that really helps. So that's one of the biggest things. But one of the biggest practical tips that you need to realize is you didn't become addicted to porn overnight. And by the way, I don't care if you call yourself an addict, compulsive, you got a problem. All right. That's the only thing you need to admit to. Okay. But you don't need to just overcome this overnight. You just need to focus on taking one step in the right direction each and every day. And if you do that for long enough, you're going to overcome this. So the very first step is admitting that you have a problem and then asking for help. Because if you could have beat this on your own, you would have done it a long time ago. Because the only thing you can beat right now on your own is your meat. All right. So I know some people are definitely relating to that as I say that. You got to ask for help. And when you do that, the first step of it is you got to limit the access. You're never going to be able to get away from every single, you know, pornography thing that's out there. You turn on a TV, you walk outside, you're going to see something. But you need to limit the access as much as you can. And then you need to start handling the pain that's going on inside. Because I want everyone who's listening to hear this. Porn is not your problem. Porn is a problem that you have in your life, but it's not the ultimate problem that you need to handle. It's not the real issue. There's a pain that's inside. And that's why you went to porn in the first place. And then it became a habit over time. And then what happened is the prefrontal cortex, right? There's gray matter that's in your brain. And that helps with decision-making, self-control. That started to atrophy over time as you watch more and more porn. People who smoke a lot, drink a lot, drugs, watch porn. That self-control part of your brain starts to wither away. So what would happen is you get a stressful email. I need to go jerk off. You get yelled at. I need to go jerk off. You know, the restaurant stopped serving your favorite dish. I need to go jerk. It's like anything draws you to this. So you need to do a couple things. Handle the pain that's inside, and then you need to break the habit. And the way that you do that, you obviously put on porn blockers, but it's about talking to that teammate and just saying, I'm having a moment. And they go, what's going on? And we use this acronym, halt the BS. So are you hungry, angry, lonely, tired, bored, stressed? What's going on? And when you actually do the inventory of that, you go, well, I'm actually stressed because this work project, I don't really like working on the work project. And I like watching porn more than I like working on this work project. Well, no duh, you do. But here's the process. Once you find out, oh, that's the problem, not porn. When you handle that issue like a grown-up, like an adult, instead of a boyish behavior running away and going to a pain reliever, magically the craving to go to this pain reliever goes away. And so that's why when I mentioned I lost 40 pounds in this process, I was smoking weed all the time, drinking all the time, eating all the time, watching porn all the time. That's why magically I lost 40 pounds because I was no longer running to food as a pain reliever. So the process we talk about is a process of going from a boy to a man. A boy runs away from his problem, goes to the pain reliever. A man stands up and handles his problems head on. And so we teach you how to do that in the course, teach you how to communicate with your teammate, teach you how to communicate with yourself. And then obviously we demystify the porn fantasy. And then we go into examining your lifestyle. So that way you're not hungry or angry or lonely or tired or bored or stressed. We handle those things, create a better environment for you so it's easier. And then lastly, we teach you how to pay it forward to that next generation, because that's been one of the most amazing things that I've had the pleasure of being able to do is helping that next person overcome porn. And then they help that next person overcome porn and that next person. And when you see that light cutting through the darkness, it just makes you want to keep going, keep going, keep going. And I would just say one of the most amazing things is after about the 3rd or 4 month mark of going through this process, I remember remarking to my wife and I'm like, I used to be addicted to this. Like, seriously? Like, this is so easy not to watch porn. Like, after we went through the work and we put it into place, like, this is so easy. And when I come on a podcast like this, I literally have to take 20, 30 minutes before and be like, okay, what was it like to be addicted? Because that's how far I've come. So the last thing, imparting thing I would say to you is just, you don't need to be an addict your whole life. You can have freedom, but you got to do the work. And it is hard, but it is worth it. And you just got to focus on putting one foot in front of the other. And if you do that day after day, you will have freedom. But it's just taking that first step, having that moment of strength and vulnerability and standing up to this evil and asking for that help.
You kind of just closed with it, but you said that first step is admitting. Mm-hmm. Is that generally talking with someone? Is it just what does that look like?
So our program is designed for you to go through it with a teammate. And, you know, you have programs like an AA or an SA, and by the way, love it. Those are great. And if that works for you, phenomenal. But if you're someone like myself, it's like, I don't want to talk to a bunch of strangers about how I looked at porn because something about that just doesn't feel right. And I have to be an addict my whole life. And I got to start with, it's like, this is not for me, right? And people have had freedom from it. And I love that. That's great. And if it's right for you, that's right for you. But our program is about getting that team around you that's close to you, that's in your life. And so it's whoever that person is who's closest to you that you can, that you're going to be talking to each day. So for me, I said, that's Becca, because I'm going to be talking to her every day. We can work through these things. And again, it's not we're talking about porn every day. It's about we're talking about what's going on. What are you feeling right now? And as men, we're told, shut up, work, die, right? In that order, right? Do those three things and then you're done. We have to realize, especially as people who are compulsive, an addict or whatever, we have a really tough time communicating what we're feeling, and we don't feel like our needs can be met any other way than going to this pain reliever. So when we can express how we're feeling, hey, I'm stressed out, hey, I'm angry, hey, I'm lonely, I'm tired, well, then we can handle it like a grown-up instead of resorting to these childish behaviors, and then magically, those problems go away. And so that's kind of our big concept is you go through the course with that teammate and we educate them on how to do this, how to support you with love and not hate and shame. And I also try to throw in some jokes to make it light, to make it fun. Getting over porn is hard enough, right? So I try to make it as fun as possible for you as you go through the process. But we have you both go through it together, whether that's you and your spouse or that's you and your friend or that's you and your parent, right? Whatever your situation is, we have a program for you, but it's designed for you to go through this as a team.
So good. Well, we're at the top of the hour, man. And I feel like we could probably keep talking about this for a couple more, but I love the work that you're doing and just appreciate you, you know, being open and coming on. I think it's going to be hopefully a huge value for the audience. So where can people find you?
Yeah. You can find us at teamvulnerable.com. We made the course extremely affordable. It's $49, 30-day money-back guarantee. Literally, I don't care. Scam the system. Get the course, do it for 29 days, and then just return it. It's a 30-day program. Like, I want you to have freedom from this because I know by you standing up to this, porn has been linked to causing divorces. It's been linked to causing rapes and suicides. And just by literally standing up and fighting this evil, you can prevent those things from happening. I was literally last night talking to a guy in Australia. And then the day before that in Denmark, and then the other day, Canada, and then the other day, New Jersey. It's like people all over the world are fighting this. And just by you standing up and saying no more, you can start to fight this evil. And the last thing I would share is that I know I talked a lot about my relationship with God and with Jesus and all that stuff. Our program is for anyone in any walk of life. You don't need to be praying 25 times a day or subscribe to any religion, anything like that. It's for anyone. But if you want to hear more about my relationship with Jesus, if you have any questions at all, reach out to us, let us know, teamvulnerable.com. We are here to help you set up your call, set it up with me. And I just want you to have that same freedom that we have because it is possible. You can overcome this and you can change the world literally by just standing up to that screen. So thank you so much, Mike, for just giving us this platform just to be able to share because people are scared to talk about this. People aren't man enough to say, you know what, this is a problem and I need to touch on the tough topic. So I appreciate you just giving us the stage to be able to do that. So thank you.
So good. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, man, and look forward to seeing what you do. So thank you again.
Thank you.
If you've found value in this episode and you know someone who's wanting to start or move further along in their journey toward investing for freedom, I would be forever grateful if you would share this show with them and help me get this message out to more listeners. Also, if you enjoy what you've heard, I would appreciate it if you take 30 seconds and leave me a 5-star review and share this with your friends. And until the next episode, cheers to moving further along in your journey of investing for freedom.